how does listening do that?
It gives them the attention that everyone wants.
There you go, attention. Good. So listen. Okay? Let me ask the question again so you got it in your head. If you wanted to make another person feel like the most special person in the world, what would you do or say? Vance?
I would say ask them about themselves.
Okay. So ask them about themselves. Okay, thank you. Good.
I would say, did you know that the Lord God, your Creator, loves you very much and cares about you?
So you would start off with a spiritual question.
Right.
Okay. Raymond.
I think whenever you have a conversation with someone, showing empathy, I'm sorry that you're going through this, is huge.
Okay. Thank you. Good. Helen?
I think it's kind of insincere to think that somebody you don't know is the most special person in the world. But you can make them feel special, but I think you're putting it in a way that's not really sincere.
What do you all feel about that response?
Yeah, there's...
I agree with her.
Jim agrees.
They don't have to be the most special person in the world.
Yeah, they don't have to be special for them to feel special.
Are they special?
Everybody is special. God created all of them. But not the most special person in the world.
What if we're all equally the most special person in the world?
Yes. Yeah, that works.
Lee?
Yeah, ask them questions that require them to talk about themselves.
Questions that involve, that require them to talk about themselves.
And don't.
Good.
Don't add a lot of judgment. Like they say, well, I like this, I like that, or, you know, I really don't like so-and-so politician. Don't be out of the gate trying to correct them or say why you think their person is that or whatnot. Just letting them talk and listening like other folks have been saying.
So the question, so the caring about them shouldn't lead to any kind of judgment.
It's not in the beginning, not until you start developing a relationship.
Should it ever lead to judgment?
No, it shouldn't, but you could ask tougher questions or share what you believe about something or somebody. I would save all that for later. I mostly would just want to lead off with learning about them, what they think, what they feel, and like other folks have been saying, listen, give them the floor. That helps them know that you're interested in them and they have value.
Good. Thank you. Ted, you had your hand up a minute ago.
Learn their name.
Learn their name. What a great idea.
And who asked that?
Ted. And you know what? There's two parts to that. You can ask their name and promptly forget it. But you said learn their name. That's different. And much better. Put a little effort into it.
How about good. Get to know them first and then ask those questions later on in the relationship? You know, take a little step. Don't rush into, you know, these crazy questions.
So, Drew, what would be involved in getting to know someone?
Well, first of all, you introduce yourself and get to know them as a person, but little steps. You don't need to know everything about them right away. You know, if you are sincere and you're interested, then you say, hey, let's get together like next week or something. Let's go have a beer or something.
So take some time with them.
Yeah, don't.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Don't rush them like right there on the spot. It's not an interview for a job.
Thank you. That's good. Marlene?
I kind of had this backfire on me last time. I was working so with Jewish refugees.
Can you speak up a little? Marlene's saying she had a backfire once.
Something about yourself, so you think that, you know, you're open to them too, that you're not just trying to,
So engage, be a good listener and respond if you get pushback. Don't go further.
Yeah, but then also give something of yourself.
Make it a real friendship, in other words, not just an interrogation. That's really important. Good. Thank you. Dan?
There's a third part of when you ask their name. If you forget it, you ask them, how do you spell your name again?
So if they say Bob, you've got to ask how to spell it. Okay. All right, so there's a point, yes, oh. The agendaless agenda.
It's really, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Doug.
Body language.
Thank you.
You should become familiar if you can about what people are signaling to you with their tone of voice, or even just expression of their face, you know, whether they're looking you in the eye and stuff. And then I had a little humorous thing for weeks. Steve Buffy called me Greg, and he just couldn't get out of his head. He said I look like a Greg. So you can have a sense of humor about these sort of things.
So if you actually cared about somebody, would you need to worry so much about your body language?
No, and you shouldn't worry about getting the name right either, but it is kind of, everybody likes to hear their name said right.
That's
know,
right.
Everybody likes to be called Bob when they're not a Bob. Right?
Glenn Ellen, thank you, Doug.
I had an older gentleman who had trouble with names, and he would do really something sweet. He'd go, I've forgotten your name again. I can't believe it. But I really care about you, and I remember seeing you in our talk, you know. And so, you know, how can you not give your name again, you know?
That's true. Good. Thank you. Well, there's a point to this. As soon as we started answering the question, of course, you all fell into the trap. The trap is this. 1 Corinthians 16:14, it says, let all that you do be done in love. All. Not just every conversation you have, everything you do, you think. This is how we are to be with every encounter we have. Paying attention to the other person, realizing that they were created especially by God with the personality that they have, and it may sound dopey, but the universe would not be the same if that person wasn't there. God had a purpose in mind for creating each one of us. So go in with the goal of trying to find out, why did God create this person? I want to know what's special about them. And it's amazing what you can get. Now, before Mark comes up, I want to ask a list of questions. This is stuff that is more I want you to think about. Okay? And this has to do with preparing your own heart for evangelism. And being really honest with God about where you're at. It's kind of like what I talked about last week about those questions about, you know, admitting to God, sometimes I don't love people, sometimes I don't even like people, sometimes I don't want to be bothered, my life's too busy. So I'm just going to read these questions, give you something to think about, because we can't do this. The Lord can use anything that we do, but it will be more effective if we do it with a real heart for people. So here's some questions. What keeps me from sharing my faith? That's sort of the heading for this whole thing. The Bible defines love. We're supposed to love everybody. We just all read that verse. Do you know what love is? What does it look like? Do you consider yourself a safe person to talk to? Do others consider you a safe person to talk to? Do you hurt? I'm going to make these personal. Do I hurt for people who don't have a relationship with Jesus? We've all heard this, and it really struck me once, and I really hated it. Somebody who had just passed away, some famous person, and somebody else said, Well, they didn't believe in God, but they believe in him now. And that's true, but it's really kind of heartless. Do we hurt for people who die not knowing the Lord, or do we feel kind of cocky about it? Do you have something ready as a response if someone asks about your faith? 1 Peter 3:15, always be ready with a response. Have you prepared something? Hugh Ross talks about having a minute or two, something ready to go if someone asks. Do you care enough to do that? Do you pray that God will put in you a heart for evangelism, a heart for other people? If you don't have that heart, if you really, like me, often just don't care because my life is too busy, can you at least pray that God will give you that heart for people? I started doing that and it changed my heart. It makes a difference. Are you willing to be made willing? We talked about that last time. Who do you regularly pray for? There's an assumption there that you regularly pray, and yet you regularly pray for people other than yourself. Who is that? Do you have people who don't know the Lord in your life that you pray for regularly? Do I have close friends who aren't saved? Are you working on relationships with people who aren't saved to become their close friend? A lot of us like to hole up in our little Christian enclaves and push out the outside world, but you know what? That's not the way Jesus did it. It's not the way the Bible tells us we should be doing it. And lastly, is it difficult, and this is very personal to me because I completely, this is me, or at least has been for much of my life. Is it difficult for you to pay attention to others because you feel not secure or competitive with them? It's very hard to love other people when you want to be loved by them, when you feel competitive with them, when you feel like you want them to notice you. You know what? Get in your relationship with Jesus Christ, get to where you feel his love and his sense of value and purpose for your own life. And then all of a sudden it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks. Or if they're like the most wealthy person in the world, or if they have the job you always wanted. All of a sudden it's like, okay, it's all right.
Yeah, I can feel that one. When my 4-year-old is playing with his big sister, 7-year-old, sometimes it's like they know each other better than anyone else on earth.
Mm-hmm.
They probably do, but sometimes that sibling rivalry, wow, it's tough. They're fighting like cats and dogs. And so maybe we can be reminded of that. Like, you have some really close relationships. Look at our rivalries. Like, if they might have turned kind of into animosity, and we can turn that back into a good, healthy rivalry.
Good. Thank you. That's good. So those are the questions. Some ideas that I have going into what Mark's going to be talking about. Be thinking about those things. Search your own heart. What keeps you from wanting to share your faith? Nancy?
So I'm realizing that I'm a people person, so I love talking to people. I'm always eager to share the Lord. But what I get hesitant about is what other people have done. You know, the people that the Bible comes.
Yes.
And I hold back because I don't want to be perceived as one of those. And really, the only solution to that, I guess, is just to go out in faith and not worry if they've met a Bible thumper before and been hurt by it, and just trust that the Holy Spirit is going to work. But that's one of my biggest hesitations, is the image people have of other believers is so negative.
And it's really important. Mark's going to be talking about a list of questions that are sort of transition questions to be able to ask people. And one of those is, have you ever had a really bad experience with a Christian? Tell me about it. And empathize, you know? So that's all I have to say, Mark. It's all yours.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
If you do not have a sheet of questions with two sides to it, look around, and there's going to be an empty chair that'll have some questions for you. You can just grab it. And what we're going to do with these is what we did last time, but we're going to do something different in one respect. First of all, what I'd like you to do is recognize we have twice as many questions today as we did last week.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is that Ross and I did some more research, put some questions there that came from Tim Wagner, and we wanted to be able to give you a bigger lexicon of questions to work from. One of the things that I found in the research was that there are a lot of people who are trying to teach people how to talk, who are trying to teach people how to have discussions and conversations. And what's interesting thing, the interesting thing about that is that so many people don't know how to do it. And I remember seeing one comment in one of the lectures that it's strange that we're the only species that has a problem communicating with other members. That the rest of them can get their points across to each other really well. Barking, kicking, biting, whatever it is. We have the most complex language and the most difficulty. So why is that? What's interfering with us that doesn't interfere with them?
Our ego.
Our ego, yeah, that's one of them.
Self-awareness.
Self-awareness is a big deal. And it's, self-awareness is not merely intrinsically, I should say it is not intrinsically something that's going to stop a conversation, but it's a symptom. It's a symptom that if you're self-aware and you cannot talk, you are what? It starts with A and ends with afraid. You're afraid of something. And it's usually being afraid of, and I'll let you try and fill that in. What are you afraid of if you want to talk to somebody and you won't do it?
Afraid of how you're being perceived.
You're afraid of how you're being perceived. I'm afraid I will not be accepted. I'm afraid I'll be rejected. I'm afraid somebody will think lowly of me. Are there ways of getting around that? Yes, there are. And so when you look at these questions, part of what we're doing here with these questions is helping you to get past the fear. To get past that fear. So you'll at least have some structure to what you want to do. Now another question that comes up is, am I really interviewing this person or am I trying to get a point across? That depends on the situation. So for in this classroom session today and last week, really what we were trying to do is to get you to know somebody. Because the thesis is, no one cares what you think unless they think you care. How do you show that you care? You listen to them and get to know who they are. And so what we're doing is starting that step, teaching us one way, not the only way, but one way of learning how we can teach them or show somebody that we care about them by listening to them and actually getting to know them. Some of the research on some of the psychopathy, some of the mental problems that people have, shows that one of the reasons that people descend into depression and some other psychopathies is that they do not believe that they are worthy to talk to people. So they'll isolate themselves. It's part of that fear syndrome. And what we want to do is we want to let people know that they're worthy. And ultimately, they're worthy not because we think they are, but because Christ thinks they are. And he died for them. So on one hand, we want to show them that they mean something to us, that they're not just somebody to sell something to, that they actually are meaningful to us. And sometimes that opens the door to them asking us, why do you care? Are you ready to answer that question? It's a real easy answer for the people in this room. If we care about somebody because Christ loves them, what's the answer to the question, why do you care? Because Christ loves you. And I love him, and I want you to know what it's like. And I want you to know that there's a lot more to this than just Christ loves you. But that's the starting point. So take the questions that you have, look at them right now, spend about 3 minutes with them, just go over them, and here are the questions I'm going to ask you about the questions. The first one is, what question did you find easiest to work from? And what question did you find the most difficult to work from? In other words, you're going to talk to somebody. Are there any questions in here you'd find difficult to start from? And are there any here that you'd find quite easy? So I'm going to give you a couple of minutes.
Is that a number on here?
Where?
On the handout.
Question.
The one that
he's
you're asking.
Question.
No, it's not on here.
Oh, okay.
It's a question to the group.
All right.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So let me make sure I get this right then. The assignment right now is for you to read the questions, and then I'm going to ask the group, what question did you find easiest to work from, and what question did you find most difficult? We'll take a couple of minutes and look at it. You can talk to each other, you can talk to yourselves, you can talk to the microbes that are next to you, whatever you want.
Both sides. Yeah.
The question was, is it just from one side or the other? It's both sides. Please use both sides.
Thank you.
All right, so we don't absorb all our time in this one question. Can I get somebody to volunteer one question that you came across that you found easiest to work from? What was the easiest question that you found to work from? Or did you find any that were easy to work from? Kim?
Number 30
in that.
Where do you live? Do you like living there?
Where do you live and do you like living there? And why do you like that one?
Because it's easy for them to answer.
It's easy for them to answer. It's a good starting point. It's easy to move from. Thank you. Anybody else have an easy one that they liked? Yes, please.
Number 29, tell me about your family.
Tell me about your family. And is it for the same reason that it's kind of an easy, smooth one to move into?
They all have pictures of their grandchildren on their phones.
Let's see. Do we have any others? Any other easy ones? Please, Tim.
Definitely like asking about their job and then specifically getting into if they like it or not, and then that's an easy avenue to get into, oh, what other things have you wanted to do, dreams, aspirations?
Good, thank you. So the answer was what kinds of things, tell me about your job, and it opens up other things like what do you like to do, those kinds of questions that are easy to answer. If you're going to be doing this, and you're going to be doing this as we're trying to practice it here, which is to develop a longer-term relationship. So this isn't, you're only going to meet somebody and in 30 seconds you're going to walk away having presented the gospel and bring them to Christ, which is unrealistic most of the time, but the Holy Spirit can do anything anywhere. But this is about how do I develop a relationship, get something started, and these questions can be used later on. You know, you start with one question, you can finish up with another. Or these may lead you to something else. I was on one website where there was probably 800 questions.
Oh,
800 questions. And that's not an exaggeration. Some of them were for dating. Some of them were for job interviews. Some of them were for what we're doing here. But there's no shortage of questions. And during the break while you folks were doing your work, I was talking with Ross Hoagland, and he mentioned that we should make sure we understand that personality is a very crucial function here. Is that some of us are more comfortable with some questions and others other questions. So that's part of the reason why there are so many, is that not all of us work the same way. And in one situation, you might feel very comfortable with one question. In another situation, you might not feel comfortable with that question. Doug?
Do you think it's true that most people like to talk more about themselves than about you or about other things?
The question is, do you think most people would rather talk about themselves rather than about you? Did I get that right?
Or some other things.
Did I get your question right?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your question. There's some anecdotal research, and then there's some real research. And the real research shows that in most situations, people enjoy having people be interested in them. There's some joy in that. They like to express themselves. They like to be able to talk about themselves and about the things that matter to them. Because we all do want to believe that we're special. And the truth is, as my son likes to tell me jokingly, you know, Dad, you're unique, just like everybody else on the planet. That is, and that's true. There is something special about every person. But that's the fact that everybody is special is universal. So, the answer to your question, Doug, is yes, people do want to talk about themselves. But there are times when talking about themselves means getting into some particular issue.
Like there's some boundaries, right?
Yeah, there are boundaries. Yeah. There are definite boundaries. And sometimes you'll bump into those, and we're not going to learn how to do that right away. Please.
One of these so-called easy questions, I found that 27 that would not be a good way to go.
All right, number 27 is, in politics, do you lean left or right? And that could be
dangerous.
That could be you just pulling the pin on a grenade and letting it go and holding on to it. Yeah.
That's a question where we have to practice listening.
Yes.
Really. Without being judgmental. Really.
And this, now Ross is bringing up a very important point.
What if I'm not?
What if you're not? What if you're right in the middle? If you don't lean, then you have good posture.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's how I
stand. But here's, Ross was mentioning earlier the question of, you know, asking whether you have, or you're left or right or whatever. If you hold a position strongly and you ask this question, what must you do while the person is talking?
Grin and bear it.
Grin and bear it, yes, because they could say something that's completely hostile to your beliefs and your values. They could say something very deeply contrary to your values. So you have to listen. Somebody said, bite your tongue. If you're biting your tongue, just remember it bleeds after a while. And that's really ugly when it comes out of your face. So you have to be able to listen. But when you're listening, what else are you doing?
Coming up with rebuttals.
Yes, that's a problem. The point that was being made by Kim was sometimes you're listening, but you're coming up with a rebuttal.
Yes.
And if you're coming up with a rebuttal, are you listening?
No.
No, you're not.
Your face is turning.
Please, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I have this. Yeah.
More loudly, please.
I have this come up a lot in my work. On people, and you have to keep conversation going. And when a couple of things, like, number one, I'm a Republican myself. Most of my clients are Democrats. So first of all, they assume that you agree with them.
Yep,
they don't. They never even consider the fact that you might not be agreeing with them. But I found that it's a good opportunity to say, gee, and see, I'm a Republican. We have disagreements, but see how we can. We have such a relationship, and now, you know, we really like each other, and so I take it more in that direction.
Okay.
And, you know, it seems to kind of smooth
things over, and then, you know, then we can have a conversation. Yeah. You have a very affable way about you. You're very easy and approachable to talk with, and that's exactly part of what we need to be. That's called being gracious. Now, somebody over here had something. Yes, please.
Just like Dr. Ross says, when you're listening to them and you can think of questions you could ask them to ferret out why they came to that conclusion, being left, you know, being very, what they call, progressive. And I think it would be part of what we've learned in class.
Thank you.
Questioning them.
So the point that was being made here was that you can always ask, how did you come to that position, or how did you arrive at that conclusion? So whether they lean to the right or to the left, or if they're like Drew and they have perfect posture, you can still ask them, how did you come to that conclusion? Ross, please.
I find that with that question and many other kinds of questions, if you simply ask, like, let's say somebody says, well, I'm a socialist, I think all income should be split up, and instead of saying, I think you're an idiot, you can say, why do you believe that? And a lot of times you'll find, if after two or three questions, that the core beliefs are very similar. They may say, well, the system's unfair and I feel bad for the poor, and there ought to be some way that the poor can be helped. Well, you know what? I feel that way too. I just have a different way of approaching it. But if you ask questions without judging, you'll often find that the core beliefs, the core goals, are very similar with that person.
Yes.
There are different types of socialism.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's good to clarify.
It's good to clarify, and you can find common ground. I mean, that's ultimately what you're looking for. Probably you won't find anyone who disagrees with everything. Please hope.
I really like what Ross and this lady back here said. I've had similar situations myself, so. But I just wanted to point out that C.S. Lewis actually turned down a knighthood for Winston Churchill in order to remain, to appear neutral in his politics.
Wow.
He never wanted his politics to precede his faith.
Who was that?
C.S. Lewis. He actually turned down a knighthood from Churchill. So, because he never wanted to appear to be political among Christians. He just, maybe in private conversations, yes, but in his public persona, he remained.
Thank you. And that kind of, that could work out well in a conversation too, couldn't it?
Yes.
Just
yes.
Keep your peace. I've been in a situation like you described where I was actually at a deposition, and before the deposition began, the attorneys and even the court reporter started talking, and they were all leaning like this. And he left. And I have better posture, so I didn't lean left. So they presumed that I believed everything they believed. And part of it, they were, in some respects, a little bit presumptuous that because I had brown skin, I had certain beliefs. And they told me that. And so I did ask them, I said, well, what makes you think that? And it went on for a little while, and thank goodness the deposition had to start, and we went on to something else. But it became very uncomfortable for them, but not for me, because I started asking them questions. And they didn't like that. How do you know that? What makes you believe I believe that? Yeah. And they realized that they had probably stepped in the wrong zone.
Good.
But I wasn't nasty about it. And if they were uncomfortable, I'm sorry they were uncomfortable, but that's because they were uncomfortable in their own skin. So we have to be cautious of that too. We don't want to put people on the defensive. That's not our job. And if they get on the defensive, then we might want to ask them why. I was watching a particular interviewer, a very skilled interviewer. She does interviews on National Public Radio and some other places. Her name is Celeste Headlee. She's a brilliant woman, and in my opinion, the best interviewer I have ever heard in my life. When she interviews somebody, she does it perfectly. And not only does she have perfect diction and never say but she asks questions and doesn't get in the way. So she has some rules that she suggests that we follow when we're doing interviews. And we're not doing interviews, but much of this applies to what we're doing when we're talking to people by asking them questions. So let me go through them with you. They're quick, but they're really, really poignant. The first one she says is, don't multitask. Be present. Purge your mind of everything else and focus on the person. So if you're talking to somebody and you're doing this,
yeah,
or you're looking around while they're talking because they're taking too long to get to their point, are you fully engaged?
No.
No. They will sense that. Will they feel like they're the most special person in the world if you are not there and present?
No.
So here's a question. How do you feel when somebody starts to just pontificate and tell you their position and go on and on about it? How do you feel about that? How do you feel when it happens?
Exhausted.
Say it again?
Exhausted.
You feel exhausted?
Mm-hmm.
How else would you feel?
Annoyed.
Left out. Yes. Thank you.
Annoyed?
So you can just fill in the blanks.
Offended.
Sure. Sure, undervalued, absolutely.
Concerned.
Time to go, I'm wasting my time. So now let's flip this around and you'll get her rule number two. Don't pontificate. Avoid simply elaborating your opinion. And here's some ways she said you might be able to do that. She says, first of all, enter every conversation assuming you have something to learn. One of the points she made is that in all of her interviews, whether she's interviewing a plumber or a head of state or a Nobel Prize winner or a school teacher, she says, I'm always prepared to be amazed. It doesn't matter who it is. Be prepared to be amazed. She said, true listening requires setting yourself aside, and sometimes it means setting aside your personal opinions. And when the person senses that you're accepting what they're saying and accepting them, because sometimes opinions and identity are tied. People believe that their opinions and their identity are the same thing. When you listen to their opinions without judging them, without showing that you're going to try and pontificate at them, they believe that you're accepting them. Next one. If someone says to you, did you drive here? Did you drive here? Did you drive to this place today? How fast can you answer that question? Quickly. Do we go very far with that? That's called a closed-ended question. If it's something that it's just a yes or a no to, that's a closed-ended question. It doesn't advance the discussion very far, especially when you do it up front. So what she's suggesting is open with an open-ended question. Most of the questions on here are open-ended. They start out with how or what or where or when, so that the person doesn't have to just say yes or no. If you can get them to elaborate, that opens them up. That's when they start to feel appreciated.
How about why?
Why is a very good question.
Really?
Yes. Yes. And the reason, if it's asked really to understand the answer. If you say why because it's a rhetorical device so that you can give a counter answer, then you're not doing it properly. That's called argumentation or debate. We're not there, at least the purpose of this class is not to teach debate. I'd love to. Maybe we will sometime, but we won't do it today.
Debate has its purposes.
It does have its purposes. Sure it does. Especially in groups, and especially when we all know what the rules are up front and what the purposes are. Yeah, we can get into debate another time. I think that's a really important point. Thank you. Questions like, how did that feel, or what was that like, or whatever, that something that makes them take a moment to think. They're more likely to get you into some of the crevices of their life that they wouldn't get into by just the short answers. Another one she has is go with the flow. Now when she means go with the flow, she means that thoughts are going to enter your mind while the other person is talking that you have to get rid of. All right, so you have to go with their flow, not your flow. So I was looking that up. She gave some numbers about the speed of speech and then the speed in which we can hear and understand. And so I went and did some research to find out, well, is she right? Are there real numbers on this? And actually there are. There's some experimental numbers, and some of them are very, very precise. But it works out about this rate. We speak on average in English, on average, you know, there's some people talk really fast, you can't even understand what they're saying. And then there's some folks who just take forever. So you average them all out, and then you put the people together who are in between there, and it comes out to about 150 words a minute. So speech is approximately 150 words per minute in English. How fast do we hear and listen? No, let me just say hear. How many things can we process in our mind? How many words, how much linguistic conversion can we make per minute?
About 3 times more?
About 3 times more is right.
Really?
Yes, sir. See, he's counting every time he's putting his thoughts together. When somebody is giving him something he doesn't want to hear, he's thinking, okay, I've come up with 3 times as many things as this person can in the same amount of time. But the truth is, it's about 3 times as much. It's about 450 to 500 words a minute is how fast your mind will operate on words. So you're capable of saying things in your head at triple the rate that the person can speak them. Now think about it. Think about all of the times when you have actually had this experience, which probably happened today sometime, that you're listening to somebody and you have another thought going on in your mind or another conversation. It might be a rebuttal, it might be something I want to throw something in. It's so easy to do, but it's transparent to us, except for now, when we're trying to make it opaque. We're saying, okay, now you can see it. That's the purpose of us talking about this, is realize this is going to happen, and it takes a lot of work to stop it. You have to come back. And one of the ways they tested this was by determining how much of what somebody else said did the people hear when they got interviewed afterwards about what was talked about. And it was fascinating because there are actually is training on how to go about not having a mental discussion while somebody else is talking. It's really brilliant. I'm impressed with some of the sociological and psychological work that's being done out there. So we can do that ourselves by at least knowing that we have these conversations going on in our head and we need to stop it. As soon as we start talking to ourselves, thinking, well, what am I going to say to that? Stop. Focus back on them. And if you didn't catch some of the words that they said because you were talking to yourself in your head, you need to stop them. And you say, I'm sorry, I just missed what you said just a couple of seconds ago. Can we please go over that again? It matters. It matters. Because, number one, you want to know what they said. And number two, it's nice for them to know you pay attention enough to be able to ask that question. It's very respectful. Very respectful. This one's the easiest one. If you don't know, just say you don't know. Don't make stuff up. Here's one. You're talking to somebody about somewhere you've gone and some things that you've done. And the person says, oh yeah, I've been there and I've done that. And let me tell you about my experience there. And then they start going on with that. Now, there are some times when if you're in a friendship, a deep friendship, and you want to just talk, you're talking over coffee and you want to exchange the kinds of experiences you had, that works fine. There's no problem with that, which is exactly why it infects places where it is a problem. Because we're so used to doing it, we don't realize that it doesn't feel good sometimes. So if you've never met me before, we're having our first conversation, and you ask me, tell me about the places where you've traveled. And then they say, well, I've traveled to Nicaragua. And, oh, I've traveled to Nicaragua too. Stop it. Do not do that. Do not do that.
You mean don't even mention that much? I'm not, you wouldn't want to elaborate and say, well, we went to this hotel. You wouldn't even want to establish that commonality.
So the question was, do we really not want to establish that commonality?
There's a way to do it.
There's a way to do it and a time to do it, but let's be very specific about your question. So the reason she says you should not do it is that when you're doing that, where does the focus go? Yeah, it goes back to me. If I'm asking the question or saying, well, I was in Nicaragua too, who am I focusing on? Yes. Now, is there a time to do it? Because what Ted's making the point is that it can show some kind of commonality. As a matter of fact, there was one speaker coach who, that's his main way of doing things, is to try and make connections with people. But his program was to show you how to link that to some agenda. And it was very effective, but it's not what we want to do today. So what I would ask you to do is to please, if you start going there, consider not going there. And just hear what the person has to say, focus on what they're saying, and get to know who they are. Yes, please, you had a question? You could, and you could. So the question was, can they say, well, oh, that's very interesting. I've been there too. I'm interested to know what you say. What if you didn't say that, and they just kept talking? In other words, don't interrupt them.
Let them talk first, and then you can chime in later.
Let them talk, because there's another question that she puts up here, or another point she's trying to make, which is, listen actively. Listen with the intent to understand, not with the intent to reply. We talked a little bit about that, but what she's getting at here as a professional interviewer is the person I'm talking to isn't here for me. They're here for them. I'm here for them. Let me focus on them and be as efficient as I can in getting as much as I can out of them so that I can know who they are and how I can go with them later. Another point she makes is, stay out of the weeds, no one cares about the details. So I don't know if any of you've had somebody you've talked to and they say, you know, you ask them, how did you get here? Oh, I drove my car. Oh, you know, I drive my car here too. And, you know, it's the car I bought in 1997. It was at the dealer right down the street and I got a really good deal. And who cares? Get off the air. Yeah, who cares? Yeah. But these are the things that we want to say because we want to say them. Please.
What you said is really important about, you know, if what I am going to say then shifts the focus to me, then I'm probably doing a disservice in there. And it can be very subtle. Like if somebody recounts a really horrible situation that they went through, I can say, I know how that feels. And even if that's all I say, for a moment it puts it on me. But if I were to say, they recount this horrible thing and I say, that must feel really bad, that keeps the focus on them.
Yeah,
it can be very subtle,
yes.
Just the words.
Yes, and one of the things we do have to be careful of is when somebody says something horrible happened and they even describe it, and you can say, and you say something like, well, I know how you feel, they may come right back and say, no, you do not.
Yeah.
No, you don't. And I remember listening to an interview of the attorney who was responsible for overseeing and making the decisions on the payouts for the 9/11 payouts that the government said, okay, we're going to give money to the survivors. And so this one attorney was responsible for determining how much money every single person was going to get. And he was interviewed. And the interviewer says, well, what did you learn out of this? And he says, one thing I learned that I'll never forget was I was talking to a man whose son was killed. And I told the man, I know how you feel. And that man looked at me and says, no, you do not. So we have to be very careful of that. We want to be sympathetic with them, but we need to be very careful. There are things that happen that we've never experienced, or if we have, we've not experienced the way they feel they've experienced it. We need to be very respectful of that. Please, somebody have something you would say?
Yeah,
yes. Well, the point is we don't understand their pain. We only understand that they do have pain.
That's right.
Yes. And the more we interject ourselves, the less they're going to talk. And we can derail their conversations too, especially somebody who's getting into something very emotional. We may need to just let them bring it out. And sometimes that's going to take a long time, and who knows where that will go. But we want to ask them if their relative is dying or died, and other people are affected by that. You know, there's a question on, I think that's the very end of the question 50 even relates to that. And it says, in brackets, it says, if a family member is ill or having a problem, ask, does that person have a religious faith to help them through that? That's a possible question. Now that's a yes-no question. It's not an open-ended question. You could say something like, what kind of faith does that person have? There you are. Jim.
I just say, I can't even imagine how bad that must be.
Mm-hmm. That looks good.
Yeah, I can't imagine how bad that would be. And there's nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, what I want to get across here is I'm not trying to create inviolable rules. What I'm trying to do is to give you some ideas about what we should consider before we get into these and some of the pitfalls we could get into. And remember that for the purposes of today, what we're trying to do is learn as much as possible about somebody else, which means the more they're talking, the more we're learning. The more we don't have the head conversation going on while they're talking, the more we're learning about them. That way we can find out, what do they need? How can I relate Christ to them? And we can't know that until we know who they are.
Another question?
Please.
Can you elaborate a little bit more?
The question is, can I elaborate more on active listening? Did I get your question proper? Okay. Active listening is a science into itself. And so it's not just a set of rules. But part of active listening is not interrupting. Part of active listening is turn off the conversation in your head that you're having to rebut them or answer them. Part of active listening is when they stop for a particular reason, you're sensitive to what needs to be done next. Are they hoping you're going to say something? Are they just pausing because they're thinking? Active listening doesn't mean some of the more commonly held beliefs that you have to mirror what they're saying. You know, somebody says something to you and you repeat it back to them. That's not necessarily active listening. That could be just interruption. But that is actually taught in some active listening skills.
You have to be careful of that. People really are, and things like that. It indicates you're actively listening, don't you think?
If you're actively listening, you're not interrupting.
At all.
At all. Because how can you be listening and talking and acting at the same time?
Okay.
Well, please.
Sometimes in that environment, I'll ask a question to better understand what they're trying to say.
Clarifying questions.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, that is certainly part of active listening.
Right.
Because if you don't understand something and you want to know who they are, ask them a question. It's perfectly appropriate to do that.
Frankly, it potentially draws them out more.
Yes. It could draw them out more. So that's a really great point. Thank you for that.
Important aspect of that is body language, and so they can see the eye contact, the facial expression, your arms folded or not. It soaks in definite messages.
Yes, the body language. There's interesting research on body language too. Not all of body language that we take for granted, or take as we've heard, in popular literature, is true. It's not always the case that with your arms crossed, people are going to interpret that as you being distant. However, I was watching a professor of behavioral science whose specialty is the study of flirting. She studied flirting in countries all over the world. And she says, if you want to know whether somebody's trying to flirt with you, or if you want to learn how to flirt with somebody, there's some rules. And the rules actually are interesting in this environment as well. Not because you're trying to be sexually attractive to somebody, but because part of what goes on in flirting is that the person knows you care. So one of the things is having, instead of being closed in, so when you're talking to them, instead of talking to them like this, you talk to them more with your hands out or in a more open posture. So that suggests interest. That's interesting. And that was universal, by the way. It didn't matter whether it was in an Asian country, a European country, or a North American country. And another one was touching. Now, that's peculiar to flirting because in flirtation, you want the other person to like you physically. And so if somebody comes up close to you, and that's the third element, is proximity, is when they get closer and closer to you, they're suggesting that they're interested in you. Now, no one of these alone will do it, but when you get the whole group of them together, it becomes flirting, it becomes a sign of flirting. And so proximics, touching, the lower you go from the shoulder to the hand, the more intimate it is. It's safe to touch the shoulder, just like it's safe to touch between the back of the shoulder blades. Other places, it's not safe. And then the other one was humor. If the person starts out with humor, looks you in the eyes, wants to spend time with you in your eyes, and touches you, and gets close, and puts himself out, and wants to do it more often than not. You know, if they're on the other side of the room and then they start doing it, they're flirting. And if you're doing it, you are flirting. So can you do some of that and show somebody that you're interested? Well, not, you don't want to show sexual interest because then you're not, that's not trying to make the gospel happen. Okay, that's something else. You're trying to make something else happen. So it's okay to get close to somebody. If that person is comfortable with you being close, then be close. There is something to be said about that. Go ahead.
Mark, what would you say to somebody who says, I'm a Christian, I have a good relationship to the Lord, but I am just not a people person. I stink at this, I don't get the clues. And to be honest, sometimes when people talk about really personal stuff, I just get really uncomfortable.
So the question is, what do I tell somebody who says they're not a people person, that they're uncomfortable talking with people, and they just don't want to do this? I say that I'll say what Hugh Ross says, and Kathy Ross, and other people who do evangelism say, that the Lord will work with you no matter what you're like. You have to be willing to talk to people, not because you're comfortable, but because Jesus calls us to do that. And Jesus will take us where it is uncomfortable. So if you're uncomfortable with it, okay, Lord, I'm uncomfortable with this. It seems like there are a couple of people in the Bible who are uncomfortable with that too. And they did some really amazing things, not because they did it, but because who did it? God did it through them. Through their weakness, God's strength was manifest. So I would tell a Christian who would say that to me, good, don't be comfortable. Be with Christ. But there are some things that we know work and we know what we shouldn't do. So let's get rid of those obstacles and then move forward with the Lord. Is that responsive to your question?
Yes, thank you, Mark.
Yes, please.
Okay, on the flip side, what if you're talking to somebody and you're trying to sense, well, they look uncomfortable, like maybe I don't want to talk that much, but they might just be shy, introverted, or not want that conversation. I mean, you want to be a respecter of them and yet still draw them out. I had a son. I mean, I still have a son. He's
good, that's good.
But how do you pick up when you're talking to somebody trying to engage in a conversation, trying to be a good example and an ambassador, and inside, how do you pick up that they're thinking, I was done a minute ago? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I want to respect that too.
So the question is, how do you know when somebody's done with you and they don't want to talk anymore? Please, go ahead. Do you have an answer? Yeah, not everybody is ready to talk all the time. Sometimes something's on their mind, or they're in a rush, or they don't like you. You know, that's fine too. Not everybody has to like us. And we have to respect that. The purpose of this is when we have the chance, when we have the opportunity, we have some means of doing it. But we don't always have the opportunity. And one of them is when somebody says or acts, I don't want to talk to you. Respect it. Yes, please.
Do you have any insight in terms of talking with younger people, like millennials or younger, as compared to people your own age?
You know, I do, and I would actually defer to somebody who's young and would like to answer that question. How about you, Tim? The question is there another way or a better way or is there a different way of talking with people who, say, are in their 20s? Would that be about the age group you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm 66, so like I'm talking to a 20-year-old.
Sure. Do you see any difference?
No, honestly, no. Just, I think all the same rules apply. Listening and being interested in what that person's interested in. I think that's really universal. Yeah. So personally, yeah, it's not any different.
What about faith-related things?
Faith-related? I don't know. Again, my instinct would be listening and asking questions and being genuinely interested is also applies. Yeah.
Shouldn't we text you?
Sorry, should we text the questions?
Should we text you? I can call you on my iPhone.
Dan, I'm afraid to ask you your question, but I'm going to do it because I'm courageous. I guess he told you he didn't want to talk to you anymore. Yeah. Good hint. You know, one of the, when you talk about millennials and the different age groups, there was a lot of research probably about 10 years ago, it really started getting pushed on the differences between the different age groups and how do you work them in the workplace. So you had the great generation, you know, the people who were alive during World War II, and then you had the baby boomers, and then you had the, what was the next group?
Gen X,
millennials.
Silent generation.
The silent generation was kind of the
the
great generation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had five generations. Currently, it's possible to have five generations in the workplace right now. And so there's been training. You know, you can spend a lot of money if you're an employer on training how to talk to these different groups and what these different groups allegedly need. I say allegedly because there was some very interesting research that asked the question, well, if these people are all that different, they all need these different things, is there anything that they all need? Is there anything in common to all of them? And there actually is.
Love.
Love is one of them, yeah. They need to be respected.
Lunch.
Lunch, yeah, they all need lunch. They all need lunch. They probably need bathrooms, too. But let's get past the basic needs to a little bit more advanced, higher level needs. And one of them was that every single group, it didn't matter whether they were young or old, needed to know where they stood with respect to their employment. So it didn't matter, in other words, the boss, you need to know whether the boss thinks you're doing your work right. Now, some people need a lot more of it than others, but everybody needs to know that. Everybody needs to know also that they're being respected. So nobody wants to feel like what they have to say is meaningless. Everybody wants to be heard. It doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how young you are. So when Tim talks about having the open-ended questions and just listening, what he's saying is consistent with the research that's being done on groups of different ages in the workplace. So I think this is a valuable lesson, is that nothing that we're talking about here is necessarily age exclusive. It's human universal. Was that responsive to your question, sir? Good. Thank you for your question. Yes,
Mark,
please.
Does that make it a part of our fallen nature that we want to be listened to and only us, or only me, for instance? Is that a sin?
So the question is it part of our fallen nature that we want to be listened to and want to be the only one listened to in a conversation? I'd like to pass that off to you folks. What do you think? Do you think that's part of our fallen nature?
The self-centeredness.
Self-centeredness could be. Yes, sir.
I would say absolutely, but we also have to remember there was the Tower of Babel where there was confusion between groups of people. And so, whatever the background is, we know there's going to be obstacles, as much as we want to reach our own kids or friends or neighbors, there will be obstacles.
Thank you. Now, when Jesus talked to people, did he talk to them as groups or did he talk to them individually or both? Okay. So let's focus on what he did when he did it individually, because we're not talking about groups. And I will get to your questions here. When Jesus dealt with people individually, was he fully present as we described it here?
Yes.
Why?
Because
he loved them. He loved them. He even loved the Pharisees that he was squaring off with individually. So if we look at whether this is a sin nature or not a sin nature, the truth is that Jesus works this way. Jesus approaches an individual and just focuses on them. Now, he sees through them in ways that we can't see through them, but he focuses them on them individually. Now, how about the question, is it part of our fallen nature? Is it a sin to want somebody to love you?
No.
What do you think?
No.
No, I don't. Nowhere in the Bible does it say that. Matter of fact, there's plenty of places in the Bible that says we should love each other. So that must mean it's okay to be loved.
The right kind of love.
The right kind of love, yes. Not the kind of love that starts with flirt, yeah. Okay, so not obsessively. So if that's the case, and I want to be loved, and somebody wants to show me that love, by focusing on me and letting me be the only person they're focusing on, would it be a sin to do it?
Apparently not.
Apparently not. Yeah. So that's kind of a thought experiment. I've never thought of that before. You come up with brilliant questions. I appreciate it. That's good. No, we love that. Yeah. We love you too. Warren.
The most impressed I've ever been in a conversation is talking to a person who's way too busy to focus on me.
But they do it anyway.
And they were focused on me like a laser.
They were focused on you like a laser. And you found what about that?
I was utterly blown away impressed. Because I knew they had way too much on their agenda to be focused on me.
It really is. That makes a big difference, doesn't it? Especially someone with power. Mm-hmm. Tells the admin up front, don't let anybody in the door. I don't want any phone calls unless the chief calls me. And then you put down the phone. What's on your mind? That is like gold. That person will listen, that person will talk, and that person will walk out believing that they were heard. And maybe even that they were loved, who knows, depending on the subject. Ross, you had a question.
Sort of going to Mark's question, I think we're built for love. We need it for, it's a survival. And we need it like we need food and water. But we're designed to be loved by God. And in our In the fall, we lost that connection, and we start looking for it from each other rather than from God. Imagine if we were all absolutely 100% secure that God loved us. It would be a different world, and we wouldn't need that affirmation from other people like we do. It's a poor substitute for what God is offering us, and we reject.
Is it really a poor substitute, or is it a form of encouragement?
It's an encouragement, but ultimately it should be an encouragement to get your love from God, not from me or from somebody else.
Well, let's play with this a bit.
Okay.
So, certainly our first love should be the Lord. Jesus was clear about that. The scriptures are clear about that. But we live on earth, and we live among humans. And now you talked a little bit about what would be like in a perfect world. So if we could all love God as he demands of us.
And be loved by him and know that.
And be, yes, know as much as a human could know about how God loves us, which is limited.
Yeah.
Then the question would be, would we still need other people to focus on us? Maybe have an answer here.
Second command.
Tell us about it.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
Okay.
So I think God wants us to love him, but he wants us to love each other too.
And that was supposed to be equal to the first commandment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
true. So the loving each other as you love God, love your neighbor as yourself is the second commandment, and it's equal to the first. Or it flows from the first. Love the Lord with all your heart, mind, soul.
Can't have the second
strength
without the first.
Please.
That's why God made Eve for Adam. Because Adam was one-on-one, Adam and God. But God knew that Adam needed a little something extra, so he made Eve. And together they had great communion with God until they sinned.
Did Adam flirt with Eve?
Yeah.
I don't want to get into that theology, right? Okay. Yes, please, Nagak.
I guess I'm thinking, okay, you know when you see those people, you know, you're on the freeway, you get off an exit, they have a sign that says, like, I'm very hungry, anything helps. But you know you're not going to fill them up, but say God impresses you, this is worth giving, you give them, like, $5. You know it's not going to last long. But you do what you can, and I'm thinking it's that little bit of love that he gives you that you can meet. Even though you know you're not going to.
Yeah, well, look, the question is, if you give somebody, a poor person who is asking for alms, if you will, and you can't pay for their meals for the rest of their life, but you give them some money, is that enough? Because you can't do everything for them. What did Jesus say? If you go to Matthew 24, and I think it's around verses 28 onward, where he starts talking about what the kingdom of God is like. And he gives one example of it being like, let's see, I'm trying to remember exactly how it went. I'm going blank on this. Let me change the tone of the argument then. Pardon me?
Paraphrase.
Yeah, well, where he was going with it is that to the extent that you give it to the least of these, you're giving it to me.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Jesus is saying, you know, at the end, people are going to say, well, what did I do that was giving to you? And I never gave you any food. I never visited you in prison. I didn't heal you. And he says, to the degree that you give this to the least of these, you're giving it to me.
So when that's like, even that listening or that conversation or that love, because I was just using food as an analogy for resources. So if you think of that way, right, you might have a conversation with somebody who's like desperate to talk to you because they're like alone or something, and you talk to them and maybe you're at this and maybe you share, that's what it worked, you need to work again. And, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you might not be.
We're only doing what the Lord gives us the power to do. So anything is better than nothing, and if you do it with the Lord, it's more powerful than if you did it alone. Sir?
It would be the same thing as supporting a missionary.
Sure.
You say, I'm going to give you so much, you know, even if I give it to you monthly, it's not going to, you're not covering their whole salary. It's like a church supporting missionaries. They don't have to pick up their whole salary and everything.
That's right.
Say we don't have a missionary, you know. Like supporting any cause, you know.
You do some of it without doing it all.
Everybody together does it, and, you know, like GoFundMe, you know, it's like, hey, it's everybody's little piece that makes it happen.
That's right.
So
thank you.
None of us are, I mean, otherwise we're feeling a burden if it's all upon us.
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't, because it's all in the Lord. Thank you. Right behind there?
A few minutes ago we were talking about Jesus talking to people individually and in groups. We kind of covered the subject individually, how he was focused on people. But in groups, it seems to me he was either teaching or he was
eating. Or eating? Is that what you said? Well, it's true. He was either going to or from a party or going to and from food.
Yeah, or maybe admonishing his guy.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to see how that concept works.
Well, when he's speaking to groups, he almost always, at least as I've seen it, has a very specific agenda. And he knows he has a limited amount of time. He's in a particular place at a particular event. And so what he's talking to them about at that particular time is completely agenda-driven, and there's not even the slightest possibility of accident. So in other words, it's almost like he set it up, and then it happened. And so he's talking, you know, whether it's a group of Pharisees, because he's just done some miracles and they're asking, well, who gives you that power? Or whether he's with his disciples in front of some monument and then he's out there, they're saying, well, what about this? And he gives them an incredibly deep lesson. So when Jesus is doing it for a group, he always has a very particular agenda and a mission and a purpose, and it has an end to it right there.
Like the Sermon on the Mount, 5,000 people, no responses.
That's right. And that was part of a grand plan that he knew he was going to continue doing. Thank you. I'm out of time. And that's kind of interesting, because I was hoping we would be able to do something else here. But I have one last thing I've got to say before I close us. And I want to give you all these rules, but the last one was that you need to be brief. So you don't want to spend too much time unless the person wants to. And there's a really interesting standard. And it's a good conversation is like a mini skirt. Short enough to retain interest, but long enough to cover the subject.